You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. David, a couple of things have happened. Firstly, there was a big rally in the United States on Friday, and today there's a big rally in the United States and in Europe in particular, and on the JSE today. And the dollar has weakened substantially. At one stage, the dollar went from below 99 to 102 versus the euro. What on earth happened to the dollar? Was it just a correction, or was there some news? Please tell me.
I don't think we're fully on top of it. I think what markets are beginning to tell you is that inflation is peaking. There was a big, you know, there was a big article out today, or that I'm looking at it on Bloomberg, that the world's hottest housing markets are facing a painful reset. In other words, a lot of property values are coming down, which will bring down rent. And remember, rent was one of the big inflation factors on top of oil, on top of wages, on top of food. So I think the market's beginning to build in that we're coming down, we will be coming down soon, or the news is going to improve. It's not evident because the Fed Reserve continues to push the same story. I was in a UBS presentation this morning, where the CIO, which from Europe, said, you know, next year we're looking for the 10-year bond below. He was, incidentally, he was very cautious over the next few months. So I'm not saying that he was bullish, by no means bullish at all. Still thinks that things are going to be tight for the next 3 months. But he goes and says that we like long-term bonds. You know, we like corporate bonds, especially America. 325, where's it today, the 10-year, wherever it is, he's talking about under 2 or 2.
329 at the moment, and it's been to 349. So,
yeah.
And it came from 0.65.
Weaker growth.
Yeah. Okay.
High-grade bonds. In other words, by high-grade bonds, the 10-year, he says, below 10% into 2023.
Gosh.
So, you know, so now if he's saying that now, I say, well, okay, you know, let's position. I know that the news might be bad for the next couple of months, but we can start to position ourselves against it. So I think that if they're starting to build this in, I know Powell dislikes that intensely because he doesn't want people to start building in lower inflation. You know, he doesn't want lower inflation embedded, and therefore people go out and spend or do whatever they do, or you know, I don't know how they react. But I mean, the market's up 4 days in a row, and I'm saying, okay, that's peculiar.
Yeah, what is
you
that?
Know, I can live with this. You know, what's happening? I'm asking the same questions as you. I'm not, in other words, have I said, okay, and sent a message, let's buy? No, you know, I'm still very cautious, but I'm saying I like the fact that it is kind of consolidating a base. You know,
I don't understand the movements, David. Big move on Wall Street on Friday. Big move at the moment today anyway. The S&P up another 1%. The dollar at one stage 2% weaker against the euro. And yet the bond prices are still relatively relatively low, 3.29 for the 10-year. It seems to me that the markets are sort of going, and they're saying, well, we're going to do this. You can do what you like. In other words, they're not getting themselves metaphorically around the table and saying, okay, well, if you're going to do that, then we're going to do that. They're actually going in their own directions, and I don't understand it. And Nick and I have spoken about this many, many times. And it's just, at the moment, things don't make sense to me, apart from the fact that people are back from their holidays in America and Europe and saying, right, let's get on with this and let's have some fun with the markets and reposition our portfolios. Maybe it's just that. Maybe they're just adding here and adding there.
I don't know what they're doing, because it's hard to pick up where the actual cash is going, because no one's admitting to it. That's where you're probably confused. You know, when you start to interview people on this program, or other news services start to invite chief investment officers, as I saw with UBS this morning, they're still very, very cautious. You know, they say, well, Are we bullish? Well, not really. You know, we need valuations to come down more. Growth needs to start to point upwards. It's still decidedly flat. And also policies need to pivot. So they give you three reasons why the market will remain flat. Why conditions will remain flat. But the market's looking beyond that and saying, okay, you know, we know what you're saying, but I'm going to buy those 10-year bonds. Or I'm going to take punt on some of these equities that have been totally sold off. So you're still hearing a lot of chief investment officers, strategists, and that talking negatively. What I want to see is evidence that, number one, all those short positions are being undone.
Yeah.
And also that money is actually flowing in and that people are starting to admit, okay, that it's time to buy. I haven't heard any of those admissions.
The short position.
Even me. You know what I mean? Even me, the bull, saying, just going to hold off a bit.
David, the short position comment you just made is terribly, terribly important, because when you see on the news wires that there are X number of put options been opened and there are X number of shorts, and when it's being published, you think to yourself, okay, that's it, time to buy, because these people are going to be squeezed. And it looks as though they've been squeezed on Friday. As you say, 4 days in a row, they're starting to be squeezed. And once they have been squeezed, then what happens? Does the market then say, okay, they're out now, we can start selling ourselves? Or does it say, okay, that means everything's bullish? What happens next? It's fascinating.
I think people who have sold, who wanted to get out, are already out.
Mm.
So even though they're short covering, it might not necessarily draw in new money. But you know, it builds on itself, hey? Markets build on themselves. As it is, it's like FOMO, fear of missing out. Oh, you know, this is starting to run away. And suddenly you say 5%, you know, whatever it is. So it does draw interest. I don't feel it yet. I can't explain. I'm generally bullish and I like what we're seeing. But I haven't been kind of triggered or forced to say, okay, let's go. Okay, we've got all the money on the side. Let's go. I still would like to see a lot more confirmation, even if I miss 5 or 10% of this market. You know what I mean? I want confirmation. Because once there's confirmation, it means that trend's going to continue. So you might miss out on those few percentage points. But I can't ignore, okay, this is 4 days in a row. You know, hello. it's not a point or two. You know, if you look at it's a percent. So it'll be very interesting to get to the bottom of who's been buying and why they've been buying.
And we never will get to the bottom of that, David. We have to trade what's on the screen, which is what our friend tells us. But if you'd have traded what you saw on your screen when Brait was 170 Rand a share, you'd be looking fairly foolish now, because you would have been buying it. And now Brait came out with a trading statement this morning and the initial reaction was very good, but it's still only 4 Rand a share. It's come from 170 to 4 Rand.
Yeah.
And I don't know, do people ever say to themselves, actually, the board of Brait should be held accountable for this type of catastrophic collapse. And I get very annoyed about companies like Brait. I'm sorry, but you can talk now.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that public companies, the management of public companies, get away with absolute murder. Absolute murder. We can start stringing them together now. You know, you can start at A and we can end at Z. I think that I can never understand how people who are handling other people's money can act in this way. You know, it's I shake my head that it wouldn't happen in the States. In the United States, you know, they would string you on they'd send out a posse and string you on the lamppost or on a tree, you know, on the closest tree. But here we get away with, you know, we've been talking about Tiger Brands recently, and this has got nothing to do with Mr. Doyle, who's the current CEO. Mm-hmm. But they blew money in Nigeria. Yeah.
Mm.
You know, and that was a start. You know, and I say, how can you blow $2 billion? And then all of a sudden, nobody there, everything gets passed, you know, quiet around the table, and on we go. There have been other businesses as well
What do you look
that
at,
have blown money. The Tongards, the EOHs, the Steinhoffs, you know, there's been no hangings or there's been no jails. You know, people haven't gone up in arms about it. We're much too
no one's resigned as well. Forgiving. And that's the other thing is, I mean, I look. I mean, Famous Brands is a great company, but which got too big for its boots. I mean, but and Kevin Hedewick, I always had some good conversations with him. But they thought that they were absolutely bulletproof, completely and totally bulletproof. They had the shield around them, and they could buy a burger chain. You can make your own burgers. You
we
can
put buy, them you, on you, these pedestals.
Yeah, you can. You can set up your own burger chain. You don't need this brand. What was it? What was it called? GBK. Whatever it was.
Gourmet
anyway,
Burger Company.
Gourmet. Exactly. Gourmet Burger Company. Anyway, they bought a burger a chain, and it's not difficult to set up a burger joint, but to pay billions for it and bring the company down. By I don't know what did it fall? It fell by half, didn't it?
Yeah. No, I can't.
More.
I can get a chart up, but they lost billions. They lost millions.
More
but
than
it's,
millions.
It's across the board. You know, I would extend the same argument to some big businesses. You know, a lot of big businesses. We've been discussing some whose, you know, results came out recently, where executives make decisions. And under the guise of expanding, it doesn't work, but they keep going on. And you say, this is not going to work. You know, at what point do you pull the plug? So, you know, there are many businesses here that have called it wrong. If we go back to Old Mutual, who went overseas at the turn of the century, you know, 1998, and blew everything. I mean, it was a disaster. We're looking now, and it's a company I like very much and have always liked, Wilson Bailey, whose results came out today. Disaster. You know, how does this happen from a company that has been one of the blue bloods of the construction industry? We always held them up to be the benchmark of how a business should be run. What happened? Do you know what I mean? What happened there? Who was to blame? Cecil blew how much – I don't know. They put in 250 billion rand, and maybe I'm making up some numbers.
Doesn't matter.
And I need to be corrected. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get the point. You put in 250 billion and came out with what? You know, I know there's new management today, but how can you do that? No one complains. We say, oh, this is a good buy at these levels. You know, it's come down to level where – but no one ever – and the other thing is that – when we analyze these companies,
yes,
and I hope Wayne's on my side or other people on my side, when we analyze these companies, we just write off the past and we start at a new beginning. We never take into consideration how much has been lost. We never look at a company from that point of view. We tend to say, no, that's past. You know, and IFRS and accounting allows us to do that. Lindsay, if you come to me with a portfolio and you say, here's R1 million, and suddenly, boom, I blow off R500,000, and then I say to you, sorry, Lindsay, you know, COVID, Ukraine, sorry, blew the wrong company.
In other words, it wasn't my fault. I hold my hands up. I'm not responsible. Yeah. I didn't know that Putin was going to start a war on the fringes of Europe. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Hey, look at Blue Label, for goodness sake, buying Celsius. Those two chaps are very personable fellows. They had a look at Cell C. Please, I mean, surely. I mean, and the point is about the South African boardroom, and actually, no, that's wrong. Worldwide, the boardroom is mainly men and mainly white men in South Africa. Let's talk about South Africa specifically. Mainly men, a couple of black men, and maybe one woman. And I just think to myself, you're sitting around there feeling very smug with yourself, and you go for a thousand rand a bottle of whiskey after you've had your meeting because you've decided to buy this or that company. They should be held accountable. There should be a corporate court that says, no, I'm sorry, you're fired. No. Off you go. It's wrong. You're misrepresenting people.
I think in South Africa, the relationships are too cozy. It's a very clubby, cozy relationship between the companies, the institutions, and, I don't think the private clients have a say anymore. Even sometimes the press is also very nervous to say anything.
They're in the pocket of these people. That's the thing.
Yeah, they're very, because, we can't criticize Mutual. they advertise. Oh, no, we can't do this. They give us this for charity. So with respect to Old Mutual, I didn't mean to single them out there, but, you know, use them as an example. But that's the cozy relationship. So very few people stand up and say, when is enough enough? You know, when do we start to look at businesses, from a different perspective? The whole of Stellenbosch. I mean, no one dare criticize them. You know, you just stay away.
It's the sacred. It's the sacred cow. Stellenbosch is the sacred cow. You're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to touch it. No, of course not. They are untouchables. I mean, it's like this whole. What's that company, Rain, that tried to hijack the telecoms deal between MTN and Telkom? Yeah. Oh, no, we mustn't say anything against these people, and I won't say the names now because I'll get into trouble. No. But you know what I mean? They're the untouchables. Mm. Listen to us ranting.
I think it's a problem here. Mm. I think it's a big issue. I think we should be more outspoken. We should be more activists in terms of that. We never criticize the very lofty numbers that companies pay their directors. You know, you've got this little cozy relationship. Everybody sits around and decides what you're going to pay directors. I mean, sometimes what some of the bankers take out is just unbelievable. How anybody can justify that they're worth that kind of money, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
$100 million here and there is actually quite standard these days for annual remuneration because the share price has done this. Even if it hasn't done that, we're still getting 50.
Yeah, sure.
It's unbelievable. Sure. What do they do all day?
I know. Well, I don't know. I don't know anybody who's that clever. I really don't know. You know, and I meet a lot of clever chaps, but... I don't know who's anybody. You know, for me, a brain surgeon is clever. You know, sometimes chaps who send rockets to the moon, those are clever men, or even to Mars, whatever it is. Yeah. You know, those people in my mind are clever. And if you compare what they earn relative to the investment bankers and to corporate leaders, it's just astonishing. It's the gap is so wide, and how they justify. It's because we allow them to justify it. Because you invite people onto the board. I'm going to invite Mr. Lindsay Williams onto my board. Lindsay, what are you doing? Nothing in the Netherlands. Come onto my board. I'll pay you $2.5 million a year to be a non-executive director. I said, oh, that's good. Are you going to challenge me if they decide to put a raise up? Who are you acting? Whose interest are you acting in? Mine or the shareholders? Forget about it.
It's very interesting. I mean, there's a couple of people I know in financial services that have made so much money just from being in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And
I don't resent them.
I'm happy with who I am.
Mm. But sometimes I look at it and just shake my head. I say, okay, you're fine. Okay, you're going to get the yacht, not me. I'll drive my Mini. That's about as it. But I don't.
What have you got? A Mini
Cooper,
David?
Carry on my life and the Paceman. I've got I'm waiting to get back to a small one.
So what have you got?
My next one's going to be
a Countryman.
I've got kind of called a Paceman. Well, this has predated that. I've actually had this one for a long time.
Yeah.
I haven't driven it all that much, especially through COVID. But I want to go back to the Mini Cooper. You know, the small original ones. They're great.
You're small and original, which is great.
I enjoy that one.
No, very good. I don't own a motor car, and I don't think I ever will again. But anyway, never mind that. David, apart from that, we had Brait. We also had Wilson Bailey Holmes, Ofcom, coming out with their results. Share price down around about 4% at the moment. I remember speaking to them. It wasn't them that was listing. It was another property company. But it was pre-World Cup 2010, wasn't it, when all these companies did so well. Mm. And then suddenly – but I must say the construction industry, the building industry, is very much linked to gross domestic product in South Africa. Of any sector, this is probably one of the closest links to economic activity. So you can't really blame the board in this regard. I don't know. Maybe you disagree with me, but
they look for growth. Mm. They look for growth. If there's no growth here, they look elsewhere for growth. Mm. They go overseas, and that's where the trouble starts. It's a very difficult industry. You know, so many things can go wrong when you're building, and because you have to design something on a piece of paper, try and cost it, and hope that you meet your targets and do what you've said, and a lot of things can go wrong, you know, from conditions that you never thought would happen to who knows, and it brings you down fast. That's why construction companies should always trade at very low multiples, because of the risks involved. And we've seen recently with Murray and Roberts, Wilson Bailey. For me, it's very sad because I've always admired them. We've seen it, you know, even Avenge. They're all battling. There's no money being spent on fixed investment here. It's starting to. It needs to be done. But without that, you know, you call it GDP plate, absolutely. You know, but without money being ploughed into the economy or being sunk into the economy, it's not going
to
happen.
It has to be infrastructure spend, and it needs to be spread out amongst companies that have been reliable over the years and are now beleaguered. Okay, David, apart from that, we're having a really good day today, up over 1.5% for the All Share and the Top 40 and all the major indices doing well. It's got a bit of a spiky feel to me, but then I'm always cautious and always thinking perhaps it's not quite right because there's no real news. And when I see the oil price, it's still at elevated levels. Let's face it. I mean, the Brent crude oil price was below 90. It's now 95 again, up 2.25%. Natural gas up 3.4%, that sort of thing. Mm. So I'm a little bit nervous about this rally, but long may it continue.
You're right. And that's why I couldn't fathom out when you said what's happening.
Yeah.
Because on Friday, we had a massive market in mining shares with the diversified miners leading, and once more we have it again. So having gone through the results, I know that you know, companies had come under pressure with commodity prices falling, and yet there was still no strong outlook on where the global economy is going, because commodities are growth orientated investments. You know, when there's growth and there's new investments being made, new mines being sunk, whatever it is, and whether someone's felt that they were cheap or whatever it is, I don't know. But platinum shares up for the second day in a row, you know, quite significantly without any real fundamental support. Yes, the platinum price has picked up a little bit, you know, a little bit, and I mean a little bit.
It is a little bit.
But anyway, the gearing, you know, against that has been quite remarkable. I'm just looking now. There's 80 shares. I always try and I first look at the top 80 shares and then go below that, you know, the top 80 capitalized shares. So that's on one of my screens. And of those top 80, 76 are up, 4 are down.
Gosh.
Which is with at the top is Bytes, which is 6%, and then all the mining shares, you know, come thereafter. So I don't know. And volumes, Lindsay, you know, I always look at what's behind this. Volumes are light. We're now at 4:30, half an hour to go, and traders 11-12 billion. Which means it's going to be another 17-18 billion day. Which So there's not huge trade behind us.
Well, the good news is, David, is that from tomorrow, football returns.
Yes. Okay. What a horrible weekend.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I must say I enjoyed the cricket. And although it was the last day of the test match officially, but the first 2 days were wiped out. But it was a two-day and half a session test match. And I'm not really enjoying it. I've always loved the five-day test match format for cricket. The one-day match, the 50-over match, was a distraction. Mm. Then they thought, okay, let's go for the T20 series. Let's go for the 20-over format. And then they've got this thing called the 100 in the UK. And I'm just thinking, eventually it'll be just bowl one ball and see who can hit a six, that sort of thing. But I really, really enjoyed it. And South Africa were great. They thrashed England in the first test, and then England thrashed them in the next two. They've just won by 9 wickets. And I really enjoyed it. So that was a distraction. I also watched a game in La Liga between Cadiz and Barcelona, you know, my beloved Barcelona. You know this Lewandowski, who's... People talk about Erling Haaland, but Lewandowski, the Polish chap, he's 33. Yeah. He's already scored 9 goals in 5 games. He is a machine. I mean, against Haaland, I think because of his age, I would go for Haaland, obviously, for longevity. But Lewandowski is absolutely fantastic. He's so fit. He's incredible.
And he's been around for some time now already, but still.
He's very good. But what we've got going on, the other thing about the Cadiz-Barcelona game, it was delayed for 1 hour. They had 1 hour's extra time because a chap behind the goal, the Cadiz goalkeeper's goal, had a heart attack. And the Cadiz goalkeeper ran to the dressing room, got a portable defibrillator and sprinted and threw it into the crowd. They caught it and he saved this guy's life. So it was an interesting sideline, yes. I enjoyed the game. Barcelona won 4-0. But what we've got coming up this week, David, is we've got Man City against Dortmund. So Erling Haaland against his old team. And a few other really, really good matches, which I can't wait to see. Mm. So we're back in business.
Yeah, there were some good games over this weekend that we missed. I must say I was very distressed by the Proteas. We've always had such depth in our cricket, whatever we were playing, whether it was 20, 50 overs or certainly the test match. Mm. And they just almost capitulated. You know, there was just nobody there who had the experience to bat this through. And then you look at the English with Stokes and Anderson and Broad. I mean, you know, just remarkable. Remarkable bowling there that got that through. And I always thought we've always had such good depth here. And I don't know what's happened, whether it's been injuries or whatever it is, but anyway.
But you've got the best bowlers in the world. You've got Kakiso Rabada. Kakiso Rabada is incredible. You got the fastest bowler in the world, and I can't remember his name now.
Nokia, exactly.
Enrico Nokia. He could bowl a ball at me, and I'd start to cry before we'd even bowled the ball. He's the fastest bowler in the world. But it's something that they're not managing the team properly. They're not getting it together because you've got some really, really good players, good batsmen, good bowlers, but they seem to be a little bit disjointed to me.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a lack of experience. Anyway, 2 days to see – a 5-day test reduced to 3 days. Yeah. And this was, if the light was better, it would have been over in 2.
Mm. But I like that.
In fact, both the other tests were open in 3 days. But it was, it was a very good format. And it certainly, it was entertaining to watch and also, in a way, tense. But nice.
Yeah, it took my mind off the Queen anyway.
I would prefer to watch Man City versus
Dortmund. But the other one, the big one, is Lewandowski going back to Bayern Munich as well. It's Bayern Munich, his former club that he adores. But to watch Bayern against Barcelona, I think, is it tomorrow night or Wednesday? It doesn't matter. But that is going to be huge. This week will take my mind off the death of my Queen. So. And I know you're just. I know you think
there've been some remarkable tributes to her. I must say,
but you said to me on a tweet, you said 90% of the people don't care. You're totally wrong. 90% of the people do care. The 10% that don't have a television, or they're drug addicts or something like that.
I was talking about those who want to watch soccer.
Exactly. I see. Yeah, that's very true. All right, David, thank you very much for your time. As always, David Shapiro is from Sasum Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.